Good morning. Just a reminder, if you will, please sign in on the sign-in sheets that are provided before you start the case. And then we'll move forward with the beginning with the case of Gregory Allen Spaulding versus the Commonwealth. Reserve any time for rebuttal?
I would care to reserve 3 or 4 minutes.
Three minutes?
Yes, sir. Thank you. Mr. Spaulding appealed to the denial of his motion to suppress cocaine that was found inside a folded dollar bill that was retrieved from his clothing in an ambulance. The evidence was not much in dispute, and it was...
Well, Mrs. Benford, let me stop you right there. Where do I turn to find the facts in this case? Because I'm not seeing any stipulation, I'm not seeing any witness testimony. All I see is argument of counsel. And it's not even, in many instances, agreed upon argument of counsel. So where do I find the facts in this case?
The motion to suppress hearing was, for lack of a better term, hijacked by Judge Fisher. He came out and said, I have a case that's dispositive. We gave us a moment to read it. He came back out of chambers and said we discussed the case that he had brought out, Kraft, and one case that was cited inside of the Morris. And then he said we can agree on some facts. That's a...
But nobody agreed on any facts.
No. In fact, some of the facts are called facts. Were disputed, for instance, whether that OPS 485, the operation manuals,
which was never introduced in evidence.
No, but it was attached to the.
Is that sufficient? Doesn't the rule say that it's something to be in evidence? It has to be initialed by the judge.
Yeah, I believe that's correct. And looking at the appendix, I don't believe that it was initialed by the judge.
So where does that leave us? Because, you know, we presume that trial judges are correct in the rule, and the burden is on the appellant to establish trial court error. If we have no, effectively have no record, we have no transcript, we have nothing to turn to establish trial court error, where does that leave us?
Well, I think we do have something to establish trial court error. I should have objected and insisted on my right to cross-examine Officer Stevens and made a better record, but he did make a ruling, and the contention of Mr. Spaulding is that that ruling was erroneous because it flies in the face of Snell again, and so in effect that's the error that is alleged, and that's the issue that we have to address.
But isn't this tantamount to a case in which a necessary transcript containing the facts to establish trial court error had not been filed, or a written statement of facts had not been prepared? I mean, this could have been dealt with a written statement of facts, an incident of trial. Could have been dealt with as a stipulation of evidence. Could have been dealt with in a number of ways, but we seem to be missing the very thing we're going to need to determine whether the trial court was correct or not.
Well,
that's evidence.
Well, we could say that the judge said we can agree on some certain facts, and so...
And that was that he was in an ambulance.
That we could agree on certain facts. One, he was a victim of a shooting. Two, that he was in an ambulance. Three, that the medic cut off his pants and handed them to Officer Stevens. And Officer Stevens looked for an identification, found the folded dollar bill, and opened it. I think those are agreed upon facts. With other facts, such as whether or not OPS 485 applied to the inventory provisions applied to a victim of a shooting as opposed to an arrestee, that was not agreed upon. Even though the Attorney General says that that was agreed upon and it was approbation and reprobation.
Well, there's no evidence that the officer was even conducting an inventory search.
It was claimed by the Commonwealth Attorney that that's what he was doing. And we were treating those, I guess, proffers as proffers, and proffers of what the evidence would be. For instance, I asserted that my client was conscious the entire time and could have provided his name. And we treated those statements by counsel as proffers of fact.
Well, there was no proffer, was there, that there was any writing, any inventory that was actually begun at any time?
No, sir, there was never any proffer that there was an inventory sheet prepared or done, and frankly, I don't believe there was one. Once Officer Stevenson found, had the eureka moment, as I call it, the investigation on his part was basically over, and in fact, they didn't really go after anybody that shot Mr. Spaulding. They were just concerned about what was found inside the dollar bill. So, I did notice that as a potential problem, but the best way I could put it is, the judge said we can agree upon some certain facts. We agreed upon the certain limited facts. There are only like four or five. And the rest of it were statements by counsel that were...
Isn't it true, counsel, that we had this Hernandez case, it's a ways back, a couple, 3 years ago, and in that case, it basically stands for the proposition, and notwithstanding the fact that there may have been an error in the trial court, it's the responsibility of the parties of the litigation, particularly the appellant or the petitioner, to make sure that there are certain proffers or evidence in the record to support the position that it wants to take. And just to sort of remind you, the Hernandez case is one of these cases where defense counsel wanted to do a primary direct cross-examination of a person. The trial court said, no, I'm not going to let you do that, even though she was entitled to do that examination. And then she didn't proffer to the record what the questions were going to be. So therefore, she was stuck on appeal, even though the trial court, in my view, and I think everybody's view, was wrong by not letting her do her examination. Aren't we in the same situation?
Well, I wouldn't like to put all the blame on counsel for the appellant, certainly, but I'm not extremely familiar with Hernandez, but I do know that as a proposition of law, that it is the appellant's duty to have the record for the appellate court's review to base their decision upon. That's certainly true.
Can you point to anything in the record, and quite frankly, I'm trying to help you a little bit here. Can you point to anything in the record where you indicated to the trial judge, we need to, I need to develop this record more, because I appreciate that you have this case that you believe is controlling, but we need to develop the record in this case so that we can set it up for proper adjudication. Is there anything you can point to in the record where you said?
I cannot point to anything in the record where I said, Your Honor, we need to develop the record further for the Court of Appeals.
Was it at least agreed upon that there was no search warrant in this case?
Yes, everybody knew that there was no search warrant involved. The motion to suppress indicated that it was a warrantless search from the very initiation of the motion to suppress. There was no warrant.
So that would make it a presumptively unreasonable search, absent one of the multitude of exceptions.
Yes, Your Honor. But there was no warrant. That's why we, in the initial motion to suppress, which is in part of the record, it says there was no warrant, and all warrantless searches are presumed unreasonable unless an exception applies. And the Commonwealth and the Attorney General's office, they argued, the Commonwealth Attorney argued it was an inventory search. The Attorney General's argued the community caretaker exception. We're arguing that none of those apply. If I argue it's analogous to the cell phones. that folded dollar bill, if he wanted to open it up and see what's inside of it, he could have gotten a warrant for it. But he had not, absent that, it should have been returned with his identification to him at the hospital.
Counsel, it appears, and I think everybody would agree, that part of the resolution of the case depends on the interpretation and reach of the Kraft decision. Kraft versus Commonwealth, you signed it as a Commonwealth. And as I read Kraft, the determination that needs to be made in the context of these warrantless searches is the focus on the particular facts in the case to see if they rise to the level of making it an unconstitutional search. Not having the facts in the case because of the unusual way that this case is presented to us, how are we in a position to say that this case is not controlled by Kraft?
Well, I guess your question deals with not the facts of Kraft, but how the lack of facts in the record,
yes, sir,
affect your analysis,
yes, sir,
to find trial court error. At this point, it's far too late in the game to develop the record any further, and it was once the record was filed. But all I can say is that the few facts that were agreed upon are the facts that are controlling.
I guess the next point would be, like, this is akin to a case where we're trying to decide whether or not there's a clear and unequivocal waiver of counsel in the case, and all the facts we have to make that decision is that defendant says he did not waive counsel. Government says he did waive counsel. You make the call. And without the foundation facts to make the call, how can we say which category it fits into?
Well, we can say that it was a warrantless search.
Yes, sir.
We can say the other facts that I've mentioned, he was shot, he was in the car, the pants were handed off to Stephen. Those were agreed upon.
Mm-hmm.
The facts that weren't agreed upon, whether or not OPS 435 applied to Mr. Spaulding. There are a few other facts were debated among the attorneys, but I think you can decide this case based upon the facts that are in the record, limited though they may be.
Well, if a warrantless search is unreasonable, unless there's an exception that applies, why doesn't the absence of an inventory list or a proffer about an inventory wind up favoring being a favorable point in your column? There's
I think it should be a factor in favor of reversal. There isn't no inventory sheet, none was proffered, or even mentioned. And in fact, from the discovery that was received, there was none offered.
You're in your rebuttal time. You may continue or reserve.
If the court has more questions, I'll entertain the questions. If not, I'll reserve the 2.5 minutes I have left.
All right. Very well, thank you, sir.
Mr. Campbell, this is a presumptively unreasonable search, and there's no facts in the record to support an exception to that search. So why do you argue that somehow we can affirm this case?
The facts, this is a very unusual case in terms of there was no testimony. And the court asked, can we stipulate on some facts? Mr. Moody seems to be stipulating on some facts on page 71 of the appendix. He was taken in an ambulance, he was handed the clothing by a medic who went into the clothing. To look for identification. I think that's an important fact that I would submit that's a stipulation, that that's what he was doing.
I did a word search in the appendix on the word stipulate, and I didn't find very much to help me there. I found a lot of argument of counsel, and that's what you point to in your brief when you refer to the appendix, but I don't even see anything that's really agreed upon between the Commonwealth and the defense attorney that would get me to an unavowed proffer.
I mean, it's what happened. The court said, when he stipulated some facts, Mr. Moody gave his version of the facts, and the Commonwealth came back on page 73 of the appendix and said, the recitation of the facts would differ just slightly. And is that Incal gives their version of the facts, and basically the only thing different in their version of the facts is the part about that he was identification, like Mr. Moody said, and he was also doing an inventory search.
Where is the stipulation that the officer was conducting an inventory search, and only an inventory search, not a pretextual search, pursuant to established Newport News Police Department policy? Where do I find that evidence?
I wouldn't call it a stipulation, because there wasn't agreed upon stipulation between counsel, but that is what the Commonwealth said that this officer would testify to. And if we're viewing the evidence in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth, I think that we get that.
But that there's no agreement by the defense that that's what the officer would testify to. I mean, opening statement and argument of counsel are not evidence. That's clear.
I agree. And perhaps there's not a stipulation, but at least take the inventory search out of the equation. There was at least stipulated that this officer was looking for identification. And
this was what's called an apothecary fold. I've seen apothecary folds 100 times in my career, 1,000 times in my career. An apothecary fold is very small. Exactly what identification would one find in a folded $1 bill?
I mean, it could be a note, it could be a receipt, it could be a telephone number on a scrap piece of paper. We don't know that was what the type of fold it was. We don't have a record of what type of fold it was.
You're correct.
We know that it was a folded dollar bill or $5 bill. I think.
Was there any testimony that he had not already found an identification card?
I don't know if there was any testimony. I think if the record would show that he found the bill before he found the ID card.
If the case, from your perspective, turns on whether or not the officer here was conducting this search adherent to a published policy of the Newport News Police Department, and that policy is not part of the record, how can we get to the framework that you would suggest we use to analyze the case?
Well, I mean, if it's not part of the record, then I guess I wouldn't be able to rely upon it. I will say that, you know, I'm relying upon the fact that, A, the Commonwealth submitted this in their brief, and B, the office, they proffered that this officer would testify that he was conducting a search pursuant to Newport News policy for inventory search.
But let's assume for the sake of discussion, and I'm not casting any judgment on it, obviously, but let's assume for the sake of judgment that policy was unconstitutional, had some things in there that you just flat can't do. Can a police officer rely on a procedure that is constitutionally inadequate? And again, it gets back to the question, we don't know what the policy says because we can't consider it.
Well, I guess the answer is, if he's relying upon it in good faith, he can rely upon it. And I don't think it necessarily has to be a written policy that we have to present into the court. It could also be the officer could testify, this is what the policy is.
So we get back to the old principles of reasonable reliance on the law that's determined to be not constitutional. Officer relies on it, he still could.
Right, and it also could be an unwritten policy. It doesn't have to be a written policy. I have a decision from this court in 2015, the Cantrell decision that says that.
And Cantrell said that there was a policy, or the officer in Cantrell said, I was searching pursuant to the established policy to see if there were any drugs in the car. And we said, that makes a pretextual search.
That was a pretextual search.
And here we don't have the police officer to say, no, I was just conducting an inventory search.
Yeah, all we have is the Commonwealth's proffer. You can't rely on the proffer. Maybe that makes it difficult.
Does it make a difference in terms of the appellant obviously has the burden to establish trial court error. And I go back to the question I posed Mr. Moody earlier. Who wins and who loses when there isn't an adequate record to determine whether the trial court erred?
Well, of course I win. I mean, that is the rule. I mean, the appellant has the ability to present an adequate record, and not adequate record for this court to decide it, then the court has to affirm that, I believe, is the rule.
Does it work that way even when the position of the Commonwealth is that they fit into an exception, and there's no evidence to support the exception?
If you can't find the exception, if you can't even reach the issue, then I think that the appellant has the burden.
But we get back to sort of get back in that little circle, though, because as Judge Petty pointed out correctly, warrantless searches are presumed to be unconstitutional. So if we start from that premise and we don't have a foundation for the Commonwealth to get to a constitutional perspective, how can the Commonwealth win?
Yeah, now you got me going around in circles. let me answer it like this. We know that, suppose for the sake of argument, there was stipulated that this medic cut these pants off and gave them to the officer. We would argue in the Kraft decision that was not a violation of the Fourth Amendment. In Kraft, if you remember, what we had was a defendant was admitted to the emergency room. The police or the doctors removed the bullet and his clothing, and they gave them to the police. And the court in Kraft said essentially that the doctors were not an agent of the state. There was no expectation of privacy in this emergency room. No Fourth Amendment violation. And I think it's a very similar circumstance in this case. We have a medic who removes the pants from the defendant, gives them to the officer. The officer now has evidence of a crime in his possession, and he looks through it. I don't think that you could say that they were an agent of the state or the fact that he had an expectation of privacy in the ambulance. I think it's more akin to the Kraft decision rather than what the appellant had relied upon.
How do you distinguish Morris?
Morris was a case where the defendant had a private hospital room that he had paid for, and the court said that this was more akin to a hotel room that someone would pay for, and therefore there was an expectation of privacy. And then in the Kraft, they distinguished Morris on the, in saying, well, emergency room is not like a private hotel room where there would be an expectation of privacy.
Kraft spends very little time talking about the rationale for the pants. Kraft focuses primarily on the bullet that was removed from the victim. I mean, it's almost a throwaway line in Kraft about the pants being subject to search because of the...
I mean, that whole last part, though, they go into the pants. They compare it just like the bullet. I think that's the language.
Let me go back to obviously what concerns me. At the entry of the guilty plea, there was actually a stipulation of facts at that time. The Commonwealth proffered its facts, and the defendant would agree. The court then said, would the defendant agree and stipulate the evidence? It's what it was, is yes, Your Honor. And when I read the stipulation of facts at the guilty plea, it says that in order to try to identify the victim, the medics cut his pants, and he was tending the wound of his legs, handed them over to Officer Stevens. Stevens checked the pockets, found several items, one of which was an identification card for the defendant. Also during that time, he found a folded up piece of paper money, turned out to be a $5 bill. It was folded up. And when he unfolded the $5 bill to see what the denomination was, he found the powder. So there's nothing in there, in that stipulation, that supports your argument that he was doing an inventory, yeah, other than just nosing around. And he'd already found the identification, according to the stipulation. Is that something we can consider? That's on page 96,
yeah,
or so. On
looking. He says, in order to try to identify the victim, And it says during that time. And he doesn't say that he found the identification card and then found the paper money. So I don't think it really gets us, I don't think it really hurts or helps him to that matter.
Counsel, in the context of what we need to decide here, taking it from the Commonwealth's perspective and the Commonwealth's goal in this case, do you think that the better way from the Commonwealth's perspective to resolve the case is to say that the record is deficient for us to make a call regarding the constitutionality of the search, and so therefore the Commonwealth wins, or is it your view that the Kraft decision provides clear direction for us and the case should be decided on Kraft?
I think the court has to make a threshold finding about the record being sufficient, and submit that if it's not sufficient, then Kraft controls. And on that note, I would say
thank you, sir.
Mr. Moody?
Just a couple brief points, judges. I would argue that the facts that were actually stipulated to at the suppression hearing, coupled with the facts that were presented at the guilty plea, conditional guilty plea, are sufficient enough for you to decide this case. It was a warrantless search. There was nothing to show that the inventory was performed. Inventory sheet was provided to the trial court, and that should be enough to show that since the Constitution presumes all warrantless searches unconstitutional, therefore Mr. Spaulding would.
So I'm going to ask you the inverse of the question that I asked your opponent, colleague. Is it your suggestion that this court should decide this case based upon the fact that it was previously stated that because a warrantless search is presumptively unconstitutional, there are no facts in this case to justify the warrantless search, your client should win, or do you believe that the facts of Morris dictate the result that we should have?
Well, I think the former is the correct position, that my client should win because there are no facts to rebut a warrantless search or to should provide exigent circumstances or an exception. However, if we're looking at Morris, I think our facts are more like Morris, where in an ambulance, it's not an emergency room when there are people coming in. You do have a higher expectation of privacy, and therefore, the court should rule that our facts are much more closer to Morris, and Mr. Spaulding should win because he had an expectation of privacy in a closed ambulance.
But not that this is public. Go ahead. This isn't, I mean, the item of search is not pants, as in Kraft. The item of search was a wallet, which is something that I would consider to be an item that one would consider private.
That's why I analogized it to the cell phone. I think it's closer to the officer finding a cell phone, and the new Supreme Court ruling goes into it, that would be impermissible. And likewise, I think Officer Stevens' actions were impermissible. Run out of time.
Very well, thank you. In keeping with the tradition of this court in their cases, we will step down and brief counsel and thereafter take up the